Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Pitchfork Media calls it the best album of the 80s, period. The Library of Congress added it to its National Recording Registry, and now it's back. Today, the album Daydream Nation by the band Sonic Youth is being reissued, and we're going to look at what made this such a watershed moment. Joining us first here in our studio are two of the members of Sonic Youth. Lee Rinaldo is guitarist and vocalist. Steve Shelley is the band's drummer. Lee, Steve, thank you both for joining us this afternoon.
All right, thanks for having us.
This is pretty amazing. It's almost, Steve, 19 years, almost 20 years since the album was released. Why revisit it now?
It just sort of happened.
You know, we embarked on this program to reissue some of the older records, there's a lot of reasons for doing it. The record company was kind of enthusiastic about doing it, and so we released some of the other records right around that same period, Dirty from 92 and Goo from 90-91, and Daydream's the third and final installment in this series. And
well, now, when you went back and actually listened to this almost 20-year-old piece again, what were you guys thinking? I mean, were you surprised at the sound of the record, at the sound of the songs?
We were a little bit surprised at the sound of the songs. You know, we're in addition to re-releasing the record, we're going to attempt to play the record live a bunch of times this summer for some special event type shows where we'll play it in order from start to finish. And about half the songs we've kind of kept in our repertoire down through the years, and the other half we literally haven't played in 15 or 18 years. So we've been going back and studying those to learn how to play them again, you know, what the tunings of the guitars were and things like that. And
well, that's the reason I ask is, I mean, Sonic Youth always, you know, the songs were not, they were guitar-driven, but not the way most of us back in the day played our guitars. You know, you guys had all these specific tunings that you and Thurston Moore would indulge in. And,
exactly.
You know, it wasn't the type of thing where you could just, like, you know, go from one song to another on stage without swapping guitars or spending 10 minutes tuning.
Right, exactly. And in those days, we did all of our own tuning and things like that. You know, we've got kind of a good crew of people to do that stuff now. But yeah, so we had a lot of different tunings. We had to struggle to recall some of them, actually. And in the process, we listened to the record. We broke it down and we listened to the multi-tracks. You know, we were listening to individual parts to relearn stuff. And we were kind of surprised at certain aspects of the way it sounded. The recording quality and the actual parts themselves that we were playing, I think, struck both Thurston and I as somewhat crude compared to where we feel we are at right now in certain regards. And yet, you know, the record as a whole really holds together because it's about the songs, which ultimately our music always has been. And, you know, it sort of pointed out to us the fact that it's not really about technique as much as, you know, certain other things that are going on there.
Lee Rinaldo and Steve Shelley from the band Sonic Youth are with us. Thurston Moore and Kim Gordon, the other two members, and they will be performing this album live, start to finish. The album is reissued today. It's called Daydream Nation, and this song is Candle. Sonic Youth from the album Daydream Nation, now 19 years old and reissued today. The song is Candle. Lee Rinaldo, Steve Shelley. I don't know about you guys, but I am flashing back like crazy here. I haven't heard these songs in so long.
Well, we spent the last 2 years flashing back with this one.
Yeah.
Well, now Lee said before, Steve, that you guys are going to be, you know, basically playing the album start to finish as a live thing. We're seeing a lot of, well, maybe not a lot, but we're seeing more bands doing that sort of thing now, taking an album on tour.
Well, we didn't want to do it, basically. A friend of ours kept inviting us to do this for Don't Look Back, an organization in London. And we finally said yes. And once we agreed to do it for him, it just sort of made sense to do it a few other places around the globe. So we'll be playing it in New York as well as London and other places.
You guys will be at the McCarran Park Pool in Brooklyn on July 28th. What does it say about the album format, first of all, when you can do something like this in a live setting? And what does it also say about the enduring influence of the kind of post-punk sound of the 80s?
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing. You know, I mean, this when we were building this album, I mean, really albums were still the thing, you know? I mean, sort of coming out of 70s rock and roll when you had concept albums. And, you know, we this was the first time we attempted to make a double album, and it was a very deliberate move on our part at that point. Not very many people coming out of our scene had made double albums at that point. You had a couple floating around. Husker Du had done Zen Arcade, and the Minutemen had done Double Nickels on the Dime, which were two very influential records for us. And we thought it was a big statement at that point. It was kind of like our coming out in a way to, you know, we felt pretty strong about what we were doing and pretty confident about the music we were making at the time, and thought double album was appropriate enough for the time.
And, you know, so many of the top indie rock bands right now seem to be echoing the music of the 1980s. You know, bands like Talking Heads and Joy Division, you know, you can hear echoes of them in a lot of, in Interpol and Arcade Fire and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Do you guys hear your musical kind of stepchildren out there now? I mean, do you hear the echoes of what you were doing in the 80s in what bands are doing today?
Well, you know, we've been around for long enough and somewhat influential for a long time, and there's definitely been traces of it here and there, you know. Usually what we hear are traces of kind of like the sort of superficial sound of it, you know, like strange tunings or things like that. And, you know, every once in a while we find a band that we feel gets something more akin to the sort of the mentality of where we're coming from, you know, that sort of aspect of the process rather than just the sound.
What was that, man? I mean, where were you guys coming from? It wasn't just the punk scene.
Well, we were coming out of a lot of different places. You know, we were young, middle-class white kids. We'd been educated, you know, college-educated in sort of like modern art theory and things like that. And we were putting together a lot of different things, from love of garage music and the punk scene, and coming to New York when Thurston Kim and I did the no-wave scene and the new-wave bands and no-wave bands, as they were called, and just a lot of different ideas from a lot of different places that were floating around in the early 80s in New York.
I first heard you and Thurston Moore as members of the Glenn Branca band, where he would do these literally symphonies for armies, small armies of electric guitars. So there was playing with the distinction between noise and music. There was playing with the distinction between conventional tuning and, you know, something completely alternative. And a lot of that still can be heard in Sonic Youth music to this day.
That's,
you know,
for sure.
In a moment, maybe we can hear something from the latest record, Rather Ripped. But let's go back for the moment to Daydream Nation and the song Eric's Trip. There's a bit of an Andy Warhol influence on this, right?
Well, the lyrics came after I had seen a screening of Warhol's Chelsea Girl movie. And there's a character that hung around in Warhol's orbit called Eric Emerson at the time. He was kind of one of their house hippies, I guess you would say. And there's a long sequence in the film where he's tripping on acid and just doing this sort of soliloquy. And I basically just jotted it down in the dark of the theater, you know, word for word, and used it as the first verse of the song. It's sort of an alienated, stoned rap kind of thing. And I thought it sort of had some kind of more universal significance.
All right. The album is Daydream Nation by the band Sonic Youth. My guests are Lee Rinaldo, guitarist, does some vocals, and Steve Shelley, the drummer. And here is a little bit from the newly reissued classic record, Daydream Nation.
My
Eric's trip is from the band Sonic Youth and their 1988 two-record set called Daydream Nation, which is really one of the defining musical moments of 1980s rock and is now back, being reissued today. Lee Rinaldo, Steve Shelley. Steve, not only being reissued and remastered, but a companion CD of live versions of all of these songs. Lee said before you guys kept about half of them in your repertoire, but, you know, you've done a lot more since 1988.
Yes.
You know, how different does this sound? Does this sound like a completely different bunch of guys to you?
In a way, it is. When you look back at this stuff, as musicians, we've changed a lot, and it's sort of like several skins ago that you've shed. So it's kind of fun. We did a lot of searching for the live cuts on the second disc, and it was fun seeing how different things were and how the same things are.
Well, let's hear a little bit of what Sonic Youth has been up to much more recently. The track's called Incinerate. I rip your heart out from your chest, replace it with a grenade blast. Incinerate, 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 incinerate. The firefighters hose me down. That's called Incinerate from the most recent album by the band Sonic Youth. We're speaking with guitarist, vocalist Lee Rinaldo and drummer Steve Shelley. The other two members of the band, Kim Gordon, the bassist, and Thurston Moore, guitar. And the four of them back in 1988 released the two-record set called Daydream Nation. It was a pioneering disc in the day, and it has been reissued today, along with a second CD, as we mentioned before, of live versions of the various pieces over the years. Lee, we mentioned the unorthodox tunings that you guys often used on the guitars, which was really, you know, an essential part of the whole sound, the noise to music ratio and all that kind of stuff. But some years ago, a lot of those guitars were stolen, right?
That's right.
So what did that do to your ability to kind of recreate this music?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There were periods in time where we designed certain songs around a particular guitar, you know, and we had a couple small instances of theft over the years. But in 99, we had absolutely our entire truckload of gear stolen. And at that point, it was gear that we'd pretty much refined to our specifications. We do use a lot of different guitars and different tunings, so we carry pretty much like a guitar store's worth of guitars with us on the road, 20 or 30 guitars and a few basses, and they all get used pretty much every night. And so everything was stolen, and it was in the initial moment, it was stolen on the morning of a day when we were in California to play a show in front of 25,000 people. So it was a little scary and frightening and you felt violated. But, in the long run, having all that stuff removed really reinforced the fact that what we do is not so much about the gear and the equipment as about our sensibilities and the way we relate to each other, because we found, you know, we were making Sonic Youth music almost immediately again, you know. And so it was kind of a vote of confidence in a way, you know, in a strange way.
Was any of that gear ever recovered?
Well, out of an entire truckload of stuff, we recovered three guitars over the years through like eBay and a couple of private sources. So not very much at all.
Yeah.
It's all still floating around out there somewhere.
Steve, how hard was it to kind of cull through all of the old live stuff to pick the versions that are on the new issue?
It was very difficult. We spent a lot of time working on that aspect of this reissue. And we we went a lot of different, we tried a lot of different routes of what the second disc might be. And we're pretty happy with what we wound up with.
Well, there are some pretty interesting covers on that second disc as well. You guys doing songs by the Beatles and Neil Young and a couple
Captain
of...
Beefheart.
Captain Beefheart and
Mudhoney.
Mudhoney, who you actually split a single with at one point. They covered one of your songs, you covered one of them. But let's hear the live version of Teenage Riot that is on the newly reissued 2-CD set, Daydream Nation by the band Sonic Youth. Here it comes. I know it's someone I knew. It's a teenage riot at a public station. Got a fight and tear it up in a hibernation for you. Now I come near you. It's not clear why you make a way. That's the live version of Teenage Riot, which now appears on the Sonic Youth album Daydream Nation in its new 2-CD incarnation. The band is performing Daydream Nation live on tour and will be bringing that to Brooklyn, the McCarran Park Pool, on July 28th. But today on Soundcheck, my guests are Lee Rinaldo and Steve Shelley. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, the Library of Congress added this album, Daydream Nation, to its National Recording Registry, along with Jimi Hendrix's Are You Experienced and tapes of Calvin Coolidge and lots of other stuff of, quote, historical and cultural significance. So, you guys are historically and culturally significant. Congratulations.
We always knew we were.
All right, Lee Rinaldo, Steve Shelley from the band Sonic Youth. Guys, thanks so much for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
Here's Kim Gordon and the rest of Sonic Youth and a song called Kissability. All right, so we've heard from Sonic Youth. Now we'll find out why they matter. Coming up, two critics join us with their takes on the merits of the band and the record. This is Soundcheck. Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Let's continue our look at the landmark alternative rock album Daydream Nation by Sonic Youth. We'll ask two music critics what's so special about it. First, Michael Azarad. He's editor-in-chief of eMusic.com and author of the book Our Band Could Be Your Life, Scenes from the American Indie Underground 1981 to 1991. Michael, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much, John.
So, your book includes an entire chapter on Sonic Youth. I mean, we've been talking about this album already for, you know, like 20 minutes. And it occurs to me many of our listeners will have never heard this record or even heard of Sonic Youth. Why is this album so important? What are we on about here?
Well, I mean, Sonic Youth was really instrumental in transforming the idea of art rock out of that sort of that pompous, quasi orchestral thing that was so prevalent in the 1970s with groups like Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer,
right.
Like all that really ponderous, terrible stuff, and into things that were more influenced by, Andy Warhol and abstract expressionism and the
more
the guy,
current art as opposed to 19th century art.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, perhaps a grittier, more urban thing happening there too. I mean, Sonic Youth, you know, they sound like New York City. I mean, you can hear car alarms and you know, garbage trucks and all kinds of clanking metal in their music. It's all over the place. And this Daydream Nation was the culmination of everything that they've been working towards, starting when in 1981 when they did their first recordings. And it's really just the apotheosis, you know, if you will, of you know, their whole development up to that point.
All right, that's Michael Azarad's opinion. Tell us what you think of Sonic Youth and Daydream Nation. You can leave a comment on the Soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. Meanwhile, let's bring in Chicago Tribune pop music critic Greg Kot. He is co-host of the weekly Chicago Public Radio program Sound Opinions. And Greg, you know, we're constantly using words like influential to talk about this record. How is this band and the album influential? Where can you still hear and feel that influence today?
Well, I think you can hear it in a lot of different places, in a lot of odd different ways. I think there's a kind of a huge, for lack of a better term, sort of a spiritual influence that you know, Sonic Youth had on a lot of bands that immediately followed it. They were, after Daydream Nation came out, they got a lot of attention. They got signed to a major label. I think it was kind of a signpost for a lot of indie bands to say, well, gee, if Sonic Youth can sign to a major and not, quote-unquote, sell out, we can too, and do things our own way. I mean, Sonic Youth made that move with a lot of integrity and transferred that impulse that Michael was talking about, the bringing the art rock and combining it with punk, and put it on a major label and put out records on a major label that were very challenging to the mainstream. So bands like, you know, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Hole, you know, you see all these bands coming up in their wake, Smashing Pumpkins, influenced by the sound, influenced by the attitude, I think, that Sonic Youth had. And you could even hear it directly. I mean, even an older generation of musicians were paying attention to what Sonic Youth was doing. You know, I'll cite Neil Young as one very prominent example. I don't think there would be an album like Ragged Glory or that Arc Weld live album that he put out in the early 90s if Sonic Youth hadn't done Daydream Nation. In fact, Neil Young had Sonic Youth open for him on a tour subsequently after that record came out.
Now, it's funny, you know, Michael, Greg's mentioning bands like, you know, Nirvana and Hole and Pearl Jam, all of whom went on to great commercial success. And for all the influence that I think everybody agrees this album by Sonic Youth had, it never really translated into that kind of commercial success.
I guess part of it was that they were just hobbled by the label that they happened to be on at the time. It was called Enigma, and they were having financial difficulties by the time they put out that record. And even though they were distributed by Capitol Records, there were still some problems. You couldn't find the record in the stores sometimes, which was really sad. Hmm. And it actually did wind up on the Village Voice Paz and Job poll at number two.
And it's on Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest albums of all time, but it's like number 349 or something like that. So, you know, it's I guess the question is this really, you called it an apotheosis. Mm. Is this their best record? Is this Sonic Youth's best record?
Well, you know, I there's a difference, I guess, between apotheosis and best. You know, I'm of the opinion, I think that their 1985 or 6 album called Evol, E-V-O-L, was the best thing they did, and Sister was pretty great too, but Daydream Nation is just a combination of those two records, but played incredibly well and recorded a bit better. They were really at the top of their game musically at the time.
So if to use a Beatles analogy, if Daydream Nation is their Sgt. Pepper, then an album like Sister is their Revolver, where a lot of the ideas, you know, sort of first came to flower and fruition.
Well, actually, I would call maybe Daydream Nation, you know, their White Album or their Exile on Main Street. That's the sprawling two albums.
Now you're getting into Rolling Stones, so you're off topic. Michael Azarad and Greg Kot with us. Here from the album Sister, this is preceding Daydream Nation, the 1986 record by Sonic Youth. This song is Schizophrenia.
She was laughing like crazy.
Schizophrenia is from Sonic Youth, not from the album Daydream Nation, but from the earlier record Sister, although here, too, you hear those very odd, unexpected chord sequences that characterize so much of their music. We're speaking with Michael Azarad, the author and editor-in-chief at eMusic.com, and with Greg Kot on the phone with us from Chicago, where he is pop music critic for the Chicago Tribune. Greg, you know, in an ideal world, we would have had one critic here telling us how great this record is and another telling us how overhyped and overrated it is. We couldn't find anybody who would tell us that, you know, this wasn't a really good record. But, you know, if there is a criticism, it's that Sonic Youth occupies this kind of weird ivory tower position. You know, they're a major label. They're on a major label and have been for many, many years, but don't seem to have the same kind of commercial pressures that other bands do, and they continue to enjoy critical success. How did they get such a favored and unique position in the music industry?
Well, I think for a generation of critics, like, you know, Michael and I are probably from that generation, and I think if you'd talk to, you know, maybe an older generation of critics, you would find some skeptics in there. I know I spoke to one. I wrote glowingly about Daydream Nation when it came out in the Tribune, and I had a pretty heated argument with Dave Marsh about it. He said, you know, you're overhyping this band. You know, nothing they've done is new. The Velvet Underground did all of that in the late 60s. You know, that was the skeptic's viewpoint on that. And my response to that was that what they've done for this particular generation of bands is take that ambition, you know, that art rock ambition that Michael was talking about, combining it with the influences of their punk generation, where art rock was sort of frowned upon, and made this amazing statement about what guitars could still do, what guitar, bass, and drums could still do. You know, there was a huge dichotomy in terms of the budgets, the publicity, the marketing, the validation, the acclaim between indie labels, indie label bands, and major label bands in the 80s. And then you had records like Zen Arcade by Husker Du and Double Nickels on the Dime by Minutemen, and this one, Daydream Nation by Sonic Youth, which basically flew in the face of that and said, we don't need your stinking budgets, we don't need your stinking attention, we don't need your acclaim, but we're going to make great music, great rock and roll music on our own terms, and we don't need a major label to dictate to us how we're going to put it out or how it's going to sound. And that was a pretty profound statement for a generation of bands and a generation of critics and a generation of fans, and I still think people look back on that stuff with an element of nostalgia to an extent, but when they play this record live, it's going to blow people away. I think there's going to be a new generation of people that are going to hear this stuff and they're going, wow, you know, nothing. There are very few guitar bands today that sound this good today. And I think it's going to stand. It holds up over time. 20 years later, it still sounds great.
Well, the album Daydream Nation is reissued today, and Sonic Youth will be doing, as Greg just said, live performances of it this summer. The whole question of nostalgia, you know, is a good one to follow up on. Michael, you know, Greg just said there are a lot of guitar bands out there today that don't sound as good as Sonic Youth did back in the day. Are there bands that sound like Sonic Youth?
You know,
are they trying to ape that sound still?
I don't know if people are trying to ape that sound. I mean, there are a lot of bands who've just been inspired by Sonic Youth and sound completely different from them, and I'm sure the band vastly prefers that. And then there are some bands who actually do recall their sound, and that's okay too, and some of them are really great. There's a band called Deerhoof who's just transcendently great, and they remind me of Sonic Youth. They remind a lot of people of Sonic Youth. Blonde Redhead has some Sonic Youth in them, Mogwai, and even Yola Tango, who are basically contemporaries of Sonic Youth, you can also hear them there too. So the sound, you know, lives on.
Now, Greg, do you think, to come back to your nostalgia question, the whole idea of bringing back an album as a live performance, are we looking at a kind of nostalgia for a bygone era, you know, of, as you were saying before, of a kind of independent rock in a quote-unquote purer form, something like that?
Well, I don't know about that, but I know there are people who are going to enjoy these shows because they remembered where they were when they first heard this record and enjoyed that tour. I certainly can position exactly where I was at Metro in Chicago when they toured behind that record. But as I said, I think that's all kind of hooey. I mean, that's classic rock nostalgia is kind of like exactly the kind of thing that Sonic Youth, went out to destroy. And I think one of the reasons that this album is valid is that it still is an amazing piece of music. It hasn't really been equaled since it came out in terms of the ambition of the record and what they were trying to do and how they pulled it off. The way they played those guitars, and not only the guitar playing, but the level of songwriting. That stuff still holds up. There's nothing nostalgic about it.
As Lee Ranaldo was saying, you know, when their guitars were stolen, they had to go back to the songs. It was all about the songwriting. The album Daydream Nation reissued today. Sonic Youth will be performing the album in its entirety during the summer, including July 28th in Brooklyn at the McCarran Park Pool. And we've been speaking with Michael Azarad, the author and editor-in-chief at eMusic.com, and Greg Kot, Chicago Tribune pop music critic. Greg, Michael, thank you both for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
This is Soundcheck.